Welcome to Lecture 4 of the Your Five Faces of God Lecture Series. This lecture is entitled Earth. The organs involved with the earth element in Chinese medicine are the spleen and the stomach, and the emotion is worry. Worry is supposed to lead us towards the virtue of integrity. So when used well, it helps us develop a sense of integrity, of honoring our word, and being reciprocal in our relationships. When abused or when imbalanced or when not respected, we can either become selfish and overly concerned with our own needs or overly selfless. Now, for many people, they consider selflessness a virtue, but in reality, it is just the opposite. Selflessness is a rejection of life and a rejection of divine providence. True virtue is integrity and respecting the needs of everyone equally. So in this lecture, the outline of it is that I'll go through the nature and the role of earth, and then talk more in detail about the nature of worry and its essential role in providing nourishment for us. Then I'll talk about the virtue of integrity and go into that in a little bit more detail, and contrast it with the distorted expression of worry, which is either selfishness or the other distortion is selflessness, and I'll explain those concepts a bit more. And then I'll go through the earth officials, and this is, as I said, the spleen and the stomach. The spleen is considered to be the minister of the granary, the official who's in charge of gathering the source of nourishment and storing it. And then the stomach is the yang organ, and as such it assists the spleen, and in that function of gathering nourishment, but it also has the job of being the courier of qi, of the carrier of qi, and providing nourishment to the actual body. We'll go through the spleen in more detail and talk about the nature of worry as it relates to the spleen. And to me, this is worry on the inside. And then talk about the stomach and its functions and differentiate its role in worry, which is more worry on the outside. And then finally, we'll get to the common beliefs about the world that cause us to have a distorted expression of worry that takes us into either selfishness or neediness or selflessness. Now, the nature of earth is that it represents our center in several ways. The first is a bit theoretical, but in five-element theory, there is a representation of the five-element relationships called the cosmological sequence. Now, this sequence looks different when drawn than the one I've described heretofore, and that there's the diagram in the homework for the intro lecture. In that diagram, the five elements are arrayed in a circle and, you know, placed equidistant around the circle, and then there's the idea of the flow of energy going essentially clockwise around the circle as one element nourishes or feeds the other. And this is a useful representation for many aspects of Chinese medicine theory, but it doesn't capture everything about the relationships between the elements. And so this other representation, the cosmological sequence, actually looks more like a cross. The earth element is in the middle, the fire element is on top, and the water element is below the earth, and then as you look at the drawing, the wood element is on the left, and the metal element is on the right. And so earth becomes the center element, and the other four elements are arrayed in essentially a circle around the earth, but in this diagram, each of the elements interacts directly with earth and not with each other. And this captures some other aspects of the earth element. Now, to really understand why that's useful, let me go into a bit more of a physiology of the earth element. I said briefly that it rules the spleen and the stomach, and the spleen in Chinese medicine includes the pancreas. And of course, the pancreas is key in the digestion in terms of producing enzymes and digestive juice. And so between the spleen, pancreas, and the stomach, there's a lot of control over the digestion that goes on in those two organs. And so energetically, they are charged with nourishment, with actually our ability to digest the food we take in, break it down, and then absorb appropriately the nutrients and the qi out of the food. And there is an aspect in Chinese medicine theory that it's not just the what we consider nutrients in a Western medicine standpoint, that there is an aspect of energy or qi that's drawn directly from the food. And so the idea of the earth element then, since the associated organs are the spleen and the stomach, is that they serve to obtain nourishment from the world. So we take in food from the world, we eat it, and then we have to turn that into usable energy for the body. So in that sense, earth is the source of all postnatal qi. So it takes energy to grow. And so in that sense, we talked about how wood supports growth. Well, for the wood to do its job and do the growing, it depends on the earth element to actually provide energy. And so there is a direct connection between the wood element being supported by the earth element. Similarly, we talked about the fire element in the previous lecture, and the same thing is that the fire element depends directly on the earth element for qi. And even to laugh, it takes energy, it takes qi. So the idea of this cosmological sequence then is that the earth element functionally or physically is at the center of our sustenance and our nourishment and our ongoing production of energy or life force. And so hence it deserves to be seen as being at the center of the other five elements. Now, our initial source qi, and this is sometimes called ancestral qi in Chinese medicine, is really the endowment of energy that we get at conception and from our mother during gestation in the womb. And that comes through the water element, but the replenishment of that qi does come from the earth. And so basically one of our life journeys then is that as we grow up is to achieve independence from having our qi provided for us by our parents and being able to obtain our own sustenance, our own nourishment directly from the earth. So, in other words, to go out in the world and provide for yourself is one aspect of growing up and maturing. And it is the earth element that governs our ability to actually then manifest nourishment and abundance from the world. The reference to earth implies a connection to the earth also from which all of our food grows. So food is basically stored solar energy, and the earth represents the basis from which food is grown. I said in the previous lecture on wood that the conception of the human being is that we stand between heaven and earth and bridge it, and indeed that is what one of the things we need to sustain that process is to get energy. And so the energy, I said that all food is stored solar energy. All food originates with sunlight, and the plants utilize that directly, this energy from heaven, to create new material out of the nutrients in terms of minerals and other chemicals from the soil, and then produce it into a living plant that actually has energy. And then, you know, regardless of whether or not you eat the vegetables or if you eat animal protein of some sort, the animal protein still was developed by feeding on plant material, which is stored solar energy. So the connection with the earth element, and then in both Chinese medicine and in Western medicine, the digestive system exists to liberate stored solar energy in the form of food and then use that in order to provide enough energy for us to function. So in essence, we're all solar powered, but the food only grows with the support of the earth. And so there's this idea of that then sustaining nourishment for ourselves, the original source of it is the fertility of the earth. And so energetically and psychologically, then earth represents stability, a firm place to stand, and being grounded. even and stable is the role of the earth element, and that's the a healthy earth energy gives us a sense of being supported by the earth and of being stable. Dizziness often occurs when the earth element is weak, and this actually has a corollary in blood sugar regulation. We know in Western medicine that when you experience dizziness, one of the phenomena may be poor blood sugar regulation. And in Western medicine, it's the pancreas that regulates blood sugar, and in Chinese medicine, it's actually the pancreas is part of the spleen meridian system. So when the earth element is weak, then the ability of the spleen pancreas to regulate our blood sugar gets weak, and we get dizzy. But the metaphor of saying that our earth energy is weak and our ability to feel supported and stable still applies. Our blood sugar isn't stable, so we don't feel stable. And so I mention that because it's just an interesting example of how much wisdom there is in this poetic metaphors, that if you follow up with enough research into Western medicine, you find it makes good sense. Interestingly, I used to have a client who would get dizzy in the late summer, around September and early October, and that is the season of Earth Element. And so every year she would have bouts of dizziness for a couple of months of the year, right towards the end of the summer, and then it would clear. And finally, when we balanced her earth element, is when the dizziness cleared up. Now, to bring that back to a basic analysis, earth is concerned with our needs, and at a most basic level, that's our physical nourishment. But we also obtain nourishment from other sources besides food. So our ability to assimilate information, which is to be nourished by knowledge and by information and to learn new things, is actually regulated by the earth element. And receiving emotional support from others and feeling connected through that support, manifesting, if you will, a support system, is also an earth element issue. As is financial abundance, because there's not much point in having a meal if it's only this meal and you don't know where the next one is coming from and if you don't have a place to eat it. So being able to actually provide for all of your needs, not just the physical nutrition and digestion, but manifesting the material and financial abundance necessary to actually foster growth and nourishment on all levels is a function of the earth. Because if you're living situation is quite challenged because you haven't been able to receive enough nourishment from the universe in a financial sense, then it's very difficult for you to have enough energy to actually develop yourself. So this is another way in which strong earth gives the resources for you to pursue your personal and spiritual growth in the wood element. Bottom line, earth asks the question, are my needs being met? And that question then leads to the emotion of worry. The nature of worry is to examine things, to turn them over and look at them from all sides to see if you've really gotten it. And so, in a very physical sense, you know, there's an expression in America anyways, I don't know about other parts of the world, that if you give a dog a bone to chew on, that he will worry the bone. And by that, what we mean is not that he sits and contemplates the nature of the bone, but that he chews on the bone from one angle and then uses his paws to turn the bone over and so he can chew on it from another angle, and then turns the bone over so that he can chew on it from another angle. And he keeps turning the bone one way and then another way and then another way, chewing all the time, trying to make sure that he's really attacked that bone from every single angle and has gleaned as much nourishment off the bone, as much of the nourishment off the bone as I was going to say humanly possible, but caninely possible. And so that image we can see outside of ourselves and we can visualize that. But that's really what goes on in our digestive tract, is that the organs of digestion, the stomach and the intestines, are incredibly muscular organs. And although they're hollow spaces, they're not just sacs where passive fermentation or chemical breakdown occurs. There is actually a ongoing process for hours of muscular contraction that effectively turns the food over and over and over so that it gets mixed up with all of the digestive juices. And then the resulting digested food, now in a liquid format, is turned over and over and over so that it's actually exposed to the wall of the intestines so that we can actually absorb all of the nutrient possible out of that. And so this idea of worry being actually the energy that drives our nourishment, to me, is an important concept. And there is very much classically in Chinese medicine the idea that the strength of your worry energy and its ability to be focused on absorbing nutrients and having good, strong digestion correlates with your ability to absorb information and have mental clarity. And so when we get in new ideas, then the first thing we need to do is turn them over a few times and see what they look like from different angles before we just swallow it wholesale and decide that, yep, that's the way the universe is. So then the idea of our intellectual processes being also driven by the energy of worry is a classic Chinese medicine principle. So really then, that's what the worry energy does, is it allows us to analyze things by turning them over, examining them, and then assessing the value of nourishment in there. And so in essence, worry asks, what's in it for me? So that's another way of looking at it, that the earth asks the question, are my needs being met? But then in any particular situation, it is actually appropriate that the worry energy asks, what's in it? So who does this benefit? How does this benefit me? And that's an important consideration. That then can lead us to discussing the nature of integrity. Integrity is, well, we common sense, we think it means being true to our word. And that's true, it is. It's speaking your truth and saying things that you mean and then standing by them and honoring them. And so that's a good description of it, but what does that actually mean and how does it relate to the emotion of worry? Well, here's one thought on that, is that if you haven't considered your own needs before making a promise, then you can't stand by your words, because when it comes time to honor whatever you've promised through your words, you may then realize that, oh, wait a minute, I can't do that. And that is a lack of integrity to promise something you can't deliver on. And that often really comes from not really being clear or being focused on being honest about what you can and cannot do, which is really a function of being present to your own needs, acknowledging your own needs, and validating them is an important thing to look at. If you've ever had the circumstance where you're asking somebody to come over and help you with some task you have to do, and whether it be a small task or a big one, like moving house, and when somebody says, oh yeah, totally, I can do that, and then the day comes and they don't show up, and you ring them up and say, oh, what happened? I thought you were going to come today and help me out. I really need your help. And they say, oh, you know what? I forgot I had another appointment, or I forgot I had to do this, or, you know, really, I just got too busy with stuff. And, you know, sorry about that. Well, it's understandable that other people have needs, but when they promise to serve your needs without having first considered their own, they make false promises. And so that's a lack of integrity that's easy to understand. So then really the integrity comes from respecting the fact that you have needs, as well as respecting that other people have needs, and that to be in relationship that you have to be cognizant of not just your needs and not just their needs, is that to be actually in integrity, you have to always look at both and to determine whether or not it's appropriate in order for you to do something or say something or offer something in that situation. So, because if you ignore your needs, you may be making promises you can't keep. And if you ignore their needs, you're not really acknowledging how similar you are, that we all have much the same needs. And sometimes it's really helpful to have other people acknowledge our needs and assist us with them. And so integrity then comes down to, are you able to worry about your needs and equally worry about somebody else's needs? And one aspect of this is faith. And that's actually, it's difficult to translate Chinese. And there's always usually a couple of possible words. But another possible word for the virtue of worry is actually faith. And in one sense, that could be faith in your own word. But it can also be faith that your needs can be taken care of and faith that other people's needs can be taken care of. And that comes out of a respect for our own divine nature, as well as the nature of others, and that the earth is the source of sustenance for all things and for everyone. The earth brings forth both weeds and flowers, and so it doesn't discriminate. It offers fertility and nourishment to all comers. And so, you know, remembering that and the idea that that is then the nature of the universe, or at least the nature of our planet in the universe, is that everything can be sustained and can be nourished because the earth doesn't discriminate, and because the earth is a metaphor for creation and hence for divine providence. And so then this ability to actually not be overly concerned with your own needs or overly concerned with other needs is actually now then seen to be rooted in the idea of faith in the natural order of things. So integrity is the virtue of honoring both yourself and others enough to be true to your word and to speak your truth. Another translation of the virtue of earth or the virtue of worry is reciprocity. So this is the idea of having equal exchange. And this really means always looking for, is this fair? Is this a fair thing? And that means, am I asking too much of somebody else? But it also means, am I giving too much to somebody else without expecting something in return? Because if you don't get something in return, then it's not actually fair. And typically some kind of imbalance or resentment arises when the exchange is unequal and unfair. Interestingly, another aspect of the virtue of integrity, which I've now defined as being able to see that we're all on the same planet and all on the same journey, and that we all spring from the essential same divine source of earth, and hence deserving of fairness, is that another way of looking at integrity is to call it altruism. And a lot of times people confuse altruism with being selfless, but true altruism means giving in a sustainable way. And it actually means you're able to give because your needs have been met. And of course, some of the most altruistic people in history have been the richest. So nobody in the history of time has ever given more money to charity than Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft. But he had to take care of his needs to amass that fortune before he could give it away. And so it's actually not pure selflessness. He's actually taken care of his needs. And now he has the abundance to be able to share with others, but typically in a way that's empowering and not just a nonstop flow of funds. It's to be setting up programs that help people help themselves, which is true altruism. And so true altruism and true charity actually comes from integrity, of being met in your own needs to be able to honor your offers of gifts. So some words that to just round out our picture of integrity that I think of as being at least partially synonymous with it are altruism, charity, philanthropy, reciprocity, engagement, connection, and that's a sense of being connected to others and that we're all on the same journey, integration, and that if we honor our needs, we actually assimilate information and assimilate nourishment and integrate it into our being and become actually more available to do service in the world. So abundance is another word that comes with integrity. In business, if you don't get paid well enough, you go out of business, and then you can no longer serve your customers with whatever useful product or service you've been providing, and you can no longer pay your employees. So a business person, to be ethical, has to make sure they're getting paid well enough. On the other hand, if you try to make all the money there is to be had in a deal, if you only look out for yourself and for your own interest, and you actually don't have any concern of whether or not this is a good deal for the other person, well, it's awfully hard to get people to do business with you again. And you won't stay in business for long if your business model is predicated on finding a new sucker every time. So really, a good business is in integrity because it offers its products and services at a price that's fair both to their ongoing needs to nourish their business as well as recognizing the need for it to be a fair deal for all the vendors and customers that are related to the business. So your needs and others always have to be seen simultaneously to be successful. And so this is why the best businesses actually really are in integrity, and they're in it for the long term and not just for this month's profits. And the irony is that true altruism and charity is only possible when your own needs are being met, as you cannot sustain your efforts or have clarity without honoring those needs. Now with that, I want to go on to the distortion of selfishness. I think we've talked about integrity enough. So the distortion of selfishness is when you have over-concern with your own needs, that there's so much concern for, are my needs being met? Are my needs being met? That you really can't see or honor the needs of others or have clarity on how much you actually need. And so you may not be happy with what you've received until you have far more than you actually need. And so this is the idea of selfishness, is that you're only concerned with your own needs rather than worrying about others as well. Other words for this could be self-indulgence, self-centered. It could also be seen as self-sufficiency. And often we think of that as a positive thing. Oh, he's really self-sufficient. But that is actually not trusting others to be of service. There's a fine line between being always needing a handout and never accepting or receiving any help from anybody. That is a concern to only provide for yourself. Or the self-sufficiency could always also be that, well, wait a minute, if I accept something from somebody else, well, then I'll owe them. And I don't want to give anybody else anything. I don't want to honor their needs. And so instead of looking for exchanges that are mutually beneficial, there's an emphasis on doing everything yourself and taking care of all your own needs yourself. And part of that is a lack of trust that the universe could provide for you, that you don't need to be working so hard and to be so independent, to be so self-sufficient. So this can also lead to obsession, is another word for selfishness, that you're just obsessed with amassing whatever it is that you desire, that you think is your need. It can also be stubbornness, where you're quite rigid and only seeing your point of view and only seeing your needs and not seeing others. And so in any relationship, personal or business, everybody's needs are valid and they may not always match up. And so the art of compromise is actually one of ethics and integrity, where we recognize the other person's need. So another word for being stubborn is not necessarily that you're always right, but that you're really only concerned with the solution that serves your needs, and you're not really looking to embrace a compromise that maybe honors somebody else's needs as well. Inflexibility would be another way to describe this selfishness, because again, it's worrying only about yourself and not being flexible. Being egotistical or being arrogant or being proud are other ways of describing the same state of being, as where really the idea, when I say selfishness, it sounds like it's only about material things, but it's really about energy and about life and about exchanges of all kinds. So that's why I give these other words, is to round out our idea of what integrity is by contrasting it with what selfish is in different ways. So selfishness denies the rights, needs, and essential divinity of others. It also represents a disconnect from original nature and a lack of faith in the universe to be able to provide for everybody. So there's an over-concern for seeking gratification rather than trusting that your needs can be met while also having concern and respect for others. It often arises out of not having your physical and or emotional needs met appropriately in childhood, and hence not being able to trust in the ability of the earth to provide your nourishment. Because the natural progression is that at first, yes, all of our needs are met by our parents, and absolutely all of our needs are met in the womb, because we don't even need to chew our food. But then as we grow up, we learn to feed ourselves, and we learn to dress ourselves, and eventually we learn to move out into the world and provide for ourselves. And how can we trust in the world to provide for us if we couldn't trust our home environment to provide for us on some level? And this, again, it could be physical or emotional. Some people suffer financial hardship in childhood, and it gives a sense of poverty consciousness or the inability to manifest abundance. And other people, their parents provide a roof over their heads and food on the table, and then that's the extent of the support they, at least the child, feels they got in childhood, and they don't feel like the earth is a supportive place when they go out on their own. So all of these things lead to an over-concern with your own issues. Now, selflessness is obviously concerned more with others' needs than with your own needs. And this, again, is often seen as a virtue, but in fact, it is a rejection of your own divine nature. If you do not honor your own need for nourishment, you cannot possibly be truly present to the needs of others. And so selflessness is really a myth. The idea that you can somehow reject your own needs and then really honor the needs of other people just doesn't add up. It's really by rejecting your self needs, your own needs, you're rejecting your divine nature. And if you're not divine and not worthy, how is it possible to see anybody else as being divine and being worthy? And so the idea that it's really, when I say selflessness is a myth, I mean, there is a phenomenon that we describe as that, but the true selflessness of only concerned for others and then being genuinely concerned, it's really hard to find an example of that. Now, often if you bring up a point like that, people will say, well, what about Mother Teresa, who's the most famous example of somebody who selflessly devoted themselves to charity work and to helping the poor in India? And it seems like a good argument, because she's often held up as a saint or all but a saint, and in because of how much charity work she apparently did. And yet, if you actually study the life and work of Mother Teresa, it doesn't support the argument that it is possible to dishonor yourself and then truly honor others. For herself, she confessed her whole life a lifelong absence of any felt presence of God in her life, that she had no faith whatsoever, that she was doing this because she felt she had to, but she had no experience of divine connection whatsoever in her entire life. And this is not a random statement. It's something she said throughout her life in private statements. So that's a pretty heavy cost to pay for selflessness, is because if you deny your own divinity, how can you actually have a connection to the divine? The other part of the controversy is that how much good her organization has actually done. So hundreds of millions of dollars are raised each year, and yet there's a lot of controversy over how much of it is actually getting spent to help the poor. And it's not clear that much of it is. So that's a huge controversy. And former nuns of her order also complained that they were all forced to take a vow of obedience and poverty, and that they were denied even basic medical care as a needless luxury, even though there was literally millions of dollars coming through every month in just one convent in donations. So certainly the needs of her helpers weren't acknowledged or met. So she didn't just not acknowledge her own needs, she didn't apparently properly acknowledge the needs of the people who were helping her do her charity work. And so it's not actually a good example of like of that idea that selflessness is actually something good and that results in actually true altruism, because the evidence isn't there. And I know this is a bit of a controversial thing for me to talk about Mother Teresa in that way, but you can go on Google and look it up yourself in terms of scandals around Mother Teresa and find just lots and lots of information supporting this. It's a myth that's actually destructive to true charity work in the world, the idea that we should ignore our own needs, because it doesn't work, and myths shouldn't be perpetuated. All right, so then here's some alternate words for selflessness. Martyrdom, you know, sacrificing yourself for a cause. And that doesn't actually add up to logic. It's like, oh, I'll die for the good of the planet. There's got to be a better reason than just sacrificing yourself to give up your life. Ingratiation. So this is the idea of having to please others, to say things to make them have gratitude towards you. So to do favors for people, to say nice things about people, you know, this is to ingratiate yourself. But that's actually, that seems like you're being kind to the other person and you're honoring their needs, but when it's done just to get approval, it's actually selfishness of your neediness being hidden as selflessness. And so it's, either way, it's what I'm saying is it's hard to step away from the idea of integrity and honoring and respecting both your needs and the other person's without somehow bringing in selfishness and over-concern for your needs, even if you are apparently selfless on the exterior. Compliancy. You know, this is going along. This is the idea of I'll just go along with what everybody else wants because I don't want anything. And, well, that's easy going, but it doesn't actually create a true relationship because you're not actually participating in the relationship. Self-sacrifice is another way of labeling this kind of behavior, this kind of distortion of concern, or self-denial. Neediness in some way, that, you know, because you don't really honor your needs in an upfront way, in an honest way, you end up being needy in other ways, and possibly emotionally clingy, you know, somebody who needs to attach themselves to other people for emotional support while verbally protesting that they don't need anything. And this can also lead to the idea of hypochondria, the person who always thinks there's something wrong with them. That's actually an imbalance of worry is to think that there's always something wrong, and that it's another way of putting it is that, oh, I think my needs aren't getting met, that my health isn't being taken care of by the universe, or by my doctors, or by my healthcare practitioners. And somebody with a strong imbalance in worry energy, to where they are really only concerned with their own needs, can develop into a hypochondriac. And one of the symptoms is somebody who sees lots of different healthcare practitioners simultaneously. Now, there's no way to draw a line on this. I'm not saying that you should only see one at a time. But on the other hand, I sometimes come across people who see one healthcare practitioner on Monday, and then two on Tuesday, and another one on Wednesday, and a third of, you know, yet another one on Thursday, and two again on Friday. And it's really an abdication of personal responsibility, of actually saying, my needs can be met and I can do something for myself. It's marching around to different practitioners with the fear and the concern and the worry that, oh, my needs haven't been met yet. The last session I got wasn't very good because it only addressed some of my needs, so I better go get yet another session. So, and again, I don't mean to make a rule on that, because I think sometimes getting two or three sessions in a week can be quite productive, but a lot of times going over that is counterproductive. So, all right, a common theme again behind many of these words is the need for approval, of needing to appear selfless as a way to receive approval from others. So it is, again, as I said, really the other side of the same coin of selfishness. It just manifests in a different way. It is still a denial of divine nature and of the divinity of others. And the divinity of others is denied when it is up to you to serve their needs. There is no faith in their own ability to provide for themselves. Now, the example of Mother Teresa, I think, was an important one, but it's also a bit abstract because, you know, few people have actually ever met her. And it's she's kind of a mythological personage in our minds. We don't really understand what it's like to be like that. So here's a more classic example, is the mother who says, oh no, nothing for me, and puts all of her energy into attending her family's needs, and attending to those needs so obsessively that she does so to the exclusion of her own needs and her own nourishment. By doing so, she ends up cutting herself off emotionally from the family, and does not foster a sense of teamwork and self-reliance in her children. One of the classic examples that many clients have told me is that their mother would do all of the cooking on a big holiday like Thanksgiving or Christmas, and lock herself in the kitchen and cook for 10 hours and not allow anybody to help her. And meanwhile, she's completely disconnected from the family on the holiday. And then by the time dinner is served, she's resentful and bitter and saying things like, well, I'm just exhausted from all that work and I hope you all appreciate me. And so this is not a proper role model for her children in terms of actually feeling like teamwork is possible, that everybody has something to offer, that things can come together. And so it actually is unsupportive environment for growth and self-confidence. And it is actually the very antithesis of selflessness, because it's actually denying the needs of other people to participate in the family activities and to contribute and to be a sense of community and family and team at a holiday when people assume they're supposed to come together and be a family. And so even, I think that's a clear example because it's more understandable. We can all imagine, even if I've painted an extreme example, of some level of a person actually denying their needs and not respecting the capacity of others to provide for themselves. And by doing so, actually being in judgment of the other person and not actually being selfless. They're actually being selfish in thinking only of their own need to feel special by doing all of the work. Okay, now that I've talked about the nature of worry, the virtue of integrity, and talked a little bit about the common distortions of selflessness and selfishness, now I want to talk about the earth officials, because after we've considered the role of the spleen and the stomach in our body and mind, then we can see a bit more clearly some of the beliefs that keep us from being in integrity, from acting with awareness of both self and others as divine. So the earth officials are the spleen and the stomach. Now the spleen is the yin organ, and hence the more important of the two. It's the spleen that rules the entire digestive function, and hence our ability to absorb nutrition out of our food. It also generates worry to help turn over our food, and as I said before, that facilitates the digestion. Now, in terms of the analogy or metaphor of the officials, the spleen is the minister of the granary, the official in charge of gathering sustenance and food, as well as gathering useful knowledge and information. So it's actually the part of our mind that is in charge of nourishing both body and mind, and being able to gather, absorb, and assimilate new nutrients and new information. The stomach is the yang organ, and generally the yang organs are assistants to the yin organs, and that is the case here. However, the stomach and the spleen share their role so much that the dominance of the importance of the spleen over the stomach is much less so in the case of earth than it is in the other elements. So it does help the spleen with digestion and that idea of absorbing the nutrients and absorbing the qi from our food, but it also helps to carry the qi generated by the spleen to the body to nourish it and give it strength. So the stomach then is actually it's still the minister of the granary, but it's kind of also the distributor. So whereas the spleen gathers and stores the food essence and the grain, if you will, the source of nourishment, the stomach is responsible for making sure that the whole body gets its share and gets enough of the nutritive tea to actually be strong and be able to do things. All right, so a little bit more on the spleen. So again, it's charged with making sure there's enough nourishment and that our physical being is nourished and maintained. So with that, its classical functions, and this is a condensed list, is that it governs transformation and transportation. So the transformation is about actually taking food and transforming it into something that we can actually use. Now, this is discussed as extracting the food qi in Chinese medicine, but it's nonetheless extracting the energy from the food. And then transportation is also considered to be a function of the spleen. And so how well food moves through your digestive tract is actually largely a function of the spleen energy. How well information processes through your mind is also a function of spleen function as well. So movement of digestion and movement of the intellect is driven by the spleen energy then. It also, from that, it governs the lymph, and in that sense it actually helps to govern the immune system because it's responsible for keeping the lymphatic system moving. That's part of its transportation function. It also generates worry to find nourishment. And so worry is thinking, and so it's looking around to make sure that my needs are being met, and that's both, you know, physical in terms of food, but also physical in terms of shelter, as well as emotional and intellectual. It's to find that which nourishes you. It physically nourishes the muscles and the tissues and gives us the ability to build our bodies. And then it said to house thought, and the idea of this is that the spleen supports mental clarity. So if the spleen is weak, our ability to focus on things is weak. And so then there's that corollary. So this is an ancient thing. There's a corollary between the ability to gather food and absorb it and focus on it, and to be able to gather information and break it down, focus on it, and absorb it. So the primary job of the spleen, then, is to worry about your needs and to gather nourishment from food and from life situations. That, again, that asking, okay, what's in this for me? Now, that's a healthy thing as long as it doesn't dishonor other people's needs and what's in it for them. So it's worrying the nutrition out of the food, as well as worrying about keeping the body clean and tidy. And that's the sense of helping to regulate the immune system and the lymphatic system, is having a look at the body from lots of different angles to see, is it clean and is it nourished? And have we gotten everything out of that food that we possibly can? Sufficient worry needs to be focused internally to maintain healthy digestion. So if somebody is actually weak in their spleen energy, then their digestion is sluggish and inefficient because they really don't have enough force in their digestive system to properly turn over their food enough and to worry the nutrition out of it. And worry is also necessary to maintain a healthy immune system. Now, when we put too much worry on outside situations, it diminishes our capacity for efficient digestion and strong immune function. So, an example of this is that I came to the realization in my practice many years ago that chronic fatigue usually has an element of thinking about the wrong things. And by that I mean thinking about things in the world that are not really yours to change. And what that does is it takes your worry energy that might have been used to actually digest your food and get proper assimilation out of it, is now being spent worrying about what's on the television, on the TV news, which is something you don't actually change by watching. And so this idea of that worry needs to be balanced. You need to keep some of it for yourself to take care of your own needs. And if you spend it carelessly out in the world, you actually harm yourself. And so for this reason, I often recommend to my clients who are very spleen deficient, I tell them not to watch the news on television because it's actually too hard on their health. So physical symptoms of imbalanced spleen worry then are digestive weakness, and this can be lack of appetite, it can be abdominal bloating, it can be constipation or loose stools, or going back and forth between them. Often it manifests as tiredness and low energy and even chronic fatigue, a sense of weakness, dizziness, and fibromyalgia is often a consequence of the body not being appropriately nourished. And lack of appetite is something that also goes along with weak spleen energy. And so then spending your worry carelessly then weakens all of these things in your body. Mentally, this imbalance in worry looks like somebody who is worried, that you can actually observe their worry, or they may talk about what they're worried about, or maybe anxiety, which is in some cases, people don't know exactly what they're worried about. They just feel anxious, and it's hard to resolve that because, you know, there's not like something you can think about clearly and explain away. You just have a sense of anxiety. Confusion over what to do is an imbalance of worry. Lack of clarity, another way of saying that, just not quite as strong. Or obsession, an obsession with self or obsession with others, or obsession with affairs that are not your own to change, is a sign of spleen weakness. And this over-concern for the affairs of the world or for others stems from an inability to have faith in the idea that everyone has a divine connection and that the universe will sort everything out. Now, I've been going on at length about the idea that integrity, then, is trusting in the will of the universe and in having faith in the ability of the earth to provide for itself. And I found a little quote, actually from a Zen textbook, but it bridges the gap between Zen and Christianity in a lovely way. And I just want to share that this little quote briefly here. A university student was visiting the Zen master and asked him, "Have you ever read the Christian Bible?" And the master said, "No, read it to me." And the student opened the Bible and read from St. Matthew, "And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take care of the things of itself." The Zen master said, "Whoever uttered those words, I consider an enlightened man." The student continued reading, "Ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh, receiveth. And he that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, it shall be opened." And the Zen master remarked, "That is excellent. Whoever said that is not far from Buddhahood." And the beauty of that little passage to me is that it is the trust in that if you have a thought or a worry for your needs and you believe that the universe can provide for you, well, then it can. If you have a thought or worry for other needs and believe that the universe can provide for them as well, well, then it can. And it's actually a concept of integrity, is an idea of empowering both self and others to be in a place of self-nourishment, and but not self-nourishment in a self-sufficient way, but actually being open to the flow of energy in the world and to allow the abundance of the earth to actually sustain you. Now, I want to go back to the officials and talk about the stomach. The stomach, I said, was the assistant minister of the granary and the assistant minister also in charge of distribution. So there is a lot of overlap with the spleen in terms of managing the digestion. And it also helps to transport the nutritive chi around the body, which is the chi that nourishes and gives strength. So that's one of its functions. The other functions of the stomach are to accept good food and to accept good, useful thoughts into the body-mind, while rejecting toxic food and toxic thoughts. And then it generates worry, both to facilitate the digestion and absorption, and as well as it does this transporting of the chi to the body to give you a sense of strength and of capability. So when the stomach is imbalanced by excessive worry, there's a more obvious or more conscious level of overthinking, in contrast to the spleen over-worry, which may be more of a general anxiety. So the spleen kind of imbalanced worry still drives our behavior in a very strong way, but it's more like subconscious reasons that we make decisions and more of a subconscious anxiety behind things. Whereas with the stomach imbalance around worry, it's more like you actually have conscious thoughts about what could go wrong and what has to be done and how many things there are to do and how behind you are in your schedule and things like that. So the overactive stomach worry, which then leads to this overactive mind or conscious mind, leads to a kind of mind-racing insomnia, which is where the person goes to bed, but they just can't shut their mind down. It's like their mind just keeps going and going and going and racing. In extreme imbalance, this tendency for the mind to be overactive is mania. And there's actually a stomach imbalance that if it's really strong, the person appears manic and they want to take off all their clothes and sing loudly, often ascending to a high place like the top of a hill or a top of a building, and then strip off all their clothes and sing because they're just bursting with all of this mental energy and it's got to get out and they can't even be contained by clothes. So this is a worry imbalance, actually, a worry gone seriously wrong. So when there's too much worry about external matters, there may be difficulty in receiving more information. It's kind of a sense of overwhelm. No, I've had enough. I can't tolerate anything else. And so when we've distorted and damaged our digestive system and our ability to receive through excess worry, particularly about external affairs, then there can be nausea, which is the food not going down the way it's supposed to, or belching, which is actually coming back up, or acid reflux and indigestion. So too much worry also weakens the ability of the stomach to provide strength to the limbs, and that gives a sense of physical weakness as well as a sense of psychological weakness and of not being strong enough to face your problems. And so when the stomach is severely imbalanced by worry, it can actually lead to thoughts of despair and depression and even suicidal tendencies because there isn't a sense of being strong enough to deal with it, to not being able to take it anymore, or not being able to stomach it anymore. All right, that leads us to a brief presentation of beliefs that affect our ability to worry appropriately and to remember that we need to worry equally about our needs and others, as well as to trust in the idea that our needs can be met and to have faith for things working out. So our reactions to life do come from our perceptions of life and how we perceive our needs and how we perceive the needs of others and what are our expectations of having our needs met. These are the fundamental concepts that drive some of these belief statements I'm going to share in a minute. So again, just to spell out some of the concepts before I list off some of the statements here. Do we believe the world is a fertile place that fosters growth and abundance? Or do we see it as a harsh place that will not provide for us? Are other people just like us? They're just trying to gather their daily bread? Or are they out to get us and to make our lives hard? So that's a sense of seeing ourselves as divine and seeing others as divine. And if we don't have faith in divine providence, we don't see other people as being capable. And we work at charity, but we can work at charity to make ourselves feel special. Look at me, I helped all the poor people. And to receive approval for our actions. Or we may see ourselves as unworthy, and hence not be able to receive anything, as that would go totally against our whole victim consciousness story. So the idea of victim consciousness can be anchored in a distortion in the earth element and in worry. It can be in just not believing that anything's possible. And that's an earth imbalance. So integrity comes from honoring your own needs, the needs of others, and trusting that things can work out. So here's some beliefs that are common to earth. Now some of them I've stated quite strongly, so I want to put in here that some of these are subconscious. You probably don't, or other people that you may know probably wouldn't admit to actually having that thought consciously, and nonetheless it does seem to be what drives their behavior. So it's more implied by behavior and actions than a thought that they have consciously, although sometimes it can actually be, in a moment of self-honesty, it can be admitted as a conscious thought. So here's some of them. I'm not able to receive is a lack of faith of the ability of the earth to provide, or I'm not worthy of receiving, which is a lack of faith in your own divine nature, or that life is overwhelming, and so this is the idea that I'm taking in too much, and I've taken in too much already, and I can't handle anything else. That usually means that you're over-concerned with the needs of others, rather than staying focused on your own needs, and in your own needs in relation to others' needs, but not taking in too many needs of too many other people. So, or similar to life is overwhelming, it's like, I'm in overwhelm, or I can't handle anything else, or I can't take anything else. Or there's always something more to worry about. Or the classic Murphy's Law, if something can go wrong, it will, and at the worst possible moment. Or another variant of this is, if it's not one thing, it's another. And this SEPs initiative, because, you know, as soon as you solve one problem, there will be another. It's an expectation of the world as not being a fertile, generous place, but being a harsh place where you have to struggle to get anything. It's better to give than to receive. So A lot of people say that, and they believe it without thinking about it too carefully. So, but that means every time I give you something and I don't get something back, I've actually said I'm better than you because I did the better action. You received, whereas I gave. And so it's actually very, very selfish to say it's better to give than to receive. It takes two to tango. It takes two to be on a giving-receiving thing. So it's appropriate for me to receive sometimes, and it's appropriate for me to give sometimes. It's all up to me is a sense that others aren't capable of providing for themselves or caring for themselves or doing their part in the world. And so another version of that is, God needs my help. And I usually don't get people to admit to that consciously, but nonetheless, that's what's underneath the surface, is that God won't provide for the world. I have to. And that's an over-responsibility of accepting that. I can't be present. I've got to worry about the future. And that's the worrying about tomorrow, when tomorrow will take care of itself. It's a lack of trust in things to sort out. If you're too preoccupied with the future that you can't be present to today, it's a lack of trust. Or just the sense of, again, of unworthiness. I don't deserve anything. Or maybe just scarcity. There isn't enough to go around. Or this idea of needing approval and being ingratiating. I think of this as, if I'm nice, or if I'm sweet, or if I'm bubbly, then people will like me. But there's some kind of a fill in the blank. If I'm something attractive, or maybe it's just helpful, maybe nice or helpful, then people will like me. And so then you're giving things to get approval. And, you know, rather than giving things honestly and then saying what you want in return so that it's a fair, integral exchange, people often give things just for approval. And, you know, I've been working in healthcare for many years, and I've been teaching healthcare practitioners for many years, and it's quite common for especially alternative healthcare practitioners to give away sessions to people, and because it's better to give than receive. And but in reality, by saying, oh, I'm going to give you this, but I'm not going to take any payment for it, is actually a distortion of the relationship between the two of you. And it's putting yourself up on a pedestal. I'm special, and I can afford to give things to you. However, you are unable to manifest anything in the universe. So therefore, you cannot afford to give anything to me. And it's maintaining this inequality and this effect of judgment to the other person. And then what you want is for the person to come back and tell you how amazing your session was. And there's often a lot of resentment from people who felt like they did a really great healing session on somebody, didn't charge them for it, and then the person didn't tell them afterwards how amazing it was. It's that hurt feelings comes from not being in integrity in the first place and saying, look, I'm going to give you a session, but I expect to get paid. And, you know, you could pay me, you could be honest about it and say you could pay me with some money, or you could be really appreciative afterwards. But either way, I want to get paid. And because we do, you know, we don't want to just give away anything for nothing. So this, I'm nice or sweet so people will like me, takes a lot of variations, is my point on that one. I can't take any more. It's just another way of saying I'm in overwhelm. And another version of the scarcity thing is that I'll never have enough. You know, you can think there's not enough to go around, or there isn't enough abundance in the world, or you can just think, I'll never have enough. All right, so I think that's enough belief systems to get you going on seeing how they may apply to you or to people in your lives, and how they come back to a distortion of worry. We need to worry about our needs. We need to be worried about other people's needs. We always need to keep those in balance. If we favor our needs over somebody else's, we're in in a state of selfishness and denial, and if we deny our own needs in favor of somebody else's, we're not actually being in integrity when we come to meet them, because we're not saying we actually want anything back. And it's not possible to consider somebody else's needs if you can't consider your own. And it's not truly possible to see somebody else's divine unless you see yourself as essentially divine. And that's the true nature of integrity. Thank you for joining me.